For members only, Golf Smarter number 234, recorded on June 8, 2010. I forgot.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The right attitude brings lower scores with Jeff Ritter.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for returning to the Golf Smarter podcast. We appreciate your membership and your continued support. Today's episode is brought to you by Golf Ahoy at GolfAhoyWest.com. For months now, I've been telling you about this amazing travel package that Golf Ahoy has created so that you can go to Ryder Cup this fall at Celtic Manor in Wales. But it's crunch time. There's a very short time left to take advantage of their offer that includes flying on the privately chartered 767 with Team USA, staying aboard the luxurious Le Diamant cruise ship right off the coast, and tickets to each day's competition. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and it's a Golf Smarter special package. So you must get in touch with Frank Rogers at GolfAhoyWest.com to secure your place, which is extremely limited. Now, to contact Frank, click on the banner ad at GolfSmarter.com for Golf Ahoy. Today's show is part two of our conversation with Jeff Ritter of JeffRitterGolf.com. Now, if you're like me, you want instant gratification in almost everything. But you're also smart enough to know that golf may be the worst place to get that. For quick improvement, you can work one-on-one with a hand-selected teacher, but for my money, a strong mental game, understanding of strategy, and the right attitude will drop your scores in just a few rounds. To me, that is the essence of Golf Smarter and why I'm so excited that Jeff agreed to come back for more. Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Jeff.
Hey, thanks, Fred.
It's good to talk to you again. And in the end of our conversation last week, I was bringing up a question submitted by a listener about he wanted to know if it was a good idea. He wanted to practice his drives, but his driving range, he has to hit more balls than he thinks his driving range can accommodate. So he wants to know if it's a good idea to use plastic or foam practice balls. He's in Linden, Utah. It's Kent Allred. And you responded with the idea of practicing with, you know, your driver, your wedge, your putter. And we really addressed more about what he should be practicing with as opposed to his question, which is the plastic or, you know, indoor practice for your driver. And I want to get back to see if we can get an answer on that part of the question.
Sure. Well, you know, practicing indoor with driver, it's really difficult, especially if you talk about these, you know, foam balls or plastic balls. You really don't know what kind of, you know, accurate representation you're going to get in terms of what kind of spin is going to come off the club face. You know, every golf club in your bag obviously has a different amount of loft on it. And that amount of loft is going to influence how much backspin you have and also how much side spin you have on each shot that you hit. So most people aren't aware of this, but when people come in for golf lessons a lot, I'll say, how can I help you? And they'll say, you know what, I hit my irons pretty straight, but I really need help straightening out my driver. And what they don't realize, they're making the same degree of error with every club in their bag, but their driver, because it has less loft, it creates more side spin and obviously sends the ball more offline. So when you're in a setting such as your backyard, and you're hitting shots, even with the driver, with the plastic ball, it's not really creating the same kind of spin. It's going to be really difficult for some people to get a good handle on actually how good their shots are, what kind of quality they're getting. So the best thing to do in terms of indoor practice is work on things like your grip, your posture in front of the mirror, working on your pre-shot routine, working on your ball position, maybe even putting yourself on video hitting some of these shots, being able to break down some key segments of your swing that you might be concerned about. That's a great way to do it because now you're taking away being concerned about the outcome as it relates to making the change. So when you go out and you hit shots from a live perspective, now you're looking at, you know, the divots, the ball flight, you know, how the ball is responding once it's airborne to give you even additional feedback in terms of what you're doing. So I think that if you're going to practice at home, there are certain things you can do at home that actually pay off more so than they do practicing at the golf course. But actually, you have to be at the golf course to be able to see the flight to know that everything you're doing is actually moving in the right direction.
It's really interesting that you talk about it in that way, because what I'm getting from you is that swing mechanics indoors is really difficult to focus on, except if you're using video.
I think it can be. I think anything that you're doing inside, you need to have feedback. You know, and the thing is that without feedback, you're not going to know whether or not you're actually making the change you think you're making. One of the things that a golfer does when they go in for a golf lesson is that if they believe in the coach, they get a certain level of confidence to follow the plan the coach is setting forth. So, for example, somebody might come in reading in a magazine or seeing in a DVD and knowing kind of what they should be trying to do, but on their own, there's no way they're going to feel as awkward as they need to feel to actually make the change to the degree the change needs to be made. So, for example, when I'm sitting here with my students in my studio, I'll say, I need you to bend over more to dress. And they'll try and bend over a little bit more. And they think they're bending over a lot, and to the naked eye, it looks like they haven't changed at all. So I'll walk up, and I'll push my hand on their back, and I'll shove their chest down towards the turf. And they say, man, this feels ridiculous. I feel like you're shoving my face into the ground. And then I'll hit click on my video. I'll say, well, look at the screen. And it looks normal. So the thing is that when you're working on your own, if you don't have a coach around to sort of push you and pull you to a new place, you're going to have to get some visual feedback so that you can understand the difference between feel and real, and whether that's in a mirror or using video. Unless you have feedback, improving on your own doesn't really happen as well as you like it to.
Right. We just don't, with the unskilled eye and the untrained eye, even using video without having a coach to work, you know, to point out what you should be looking at, probably will work against you.
Exactly. And it's really a difficult thing to do, to feel as awkward as you need to feel. And I learned this lesson very early in my coaching. You know, I was working at a place called the Atlantic Golf Club, which is out in the eastern end of Long Island, New York. And, you know, I was giving golf lessons, you know, 5, 7, 8 lessons a day, you know, helping my clients. Everyone's getting better. And then, of course, at the end of the day, you know, you go out to the back of the practice tee where it's nice and private, and you start working on your own game a little bit. And this is back when we were using, you know, VHS tapes and cameras and holding those big bulky cameras out to the left tee. And I had an issue with my golf swing where my takeaway was a little bit underneath the swing plane, a little bit flat. And then my downswing tended to get a little bit over top of the swing plane, a little bit steep. And the thing with my own game was I was hitting balls off the toe. I hit a little bit of a fade. You know, my divots got a little bit deep from time to time, which is a pretty common problem that even amateurs have out there. And I was getting really frustrated because every time I tried to improve my takeaway and improve my downswing, I would go back and look at it on video, and it wouldn't change much at all. You know, and you start getting to that point where you're approaching meltdown. And it was one of these days where I just had enough. And I'm pretty patient on the golf course. But after I hit another ball off the toe of my club, I said to myself, I'm going to make a swing like Jim Furyk. You know, what is that going to look like? You know, because Jim and I went to high school together. I knew his swing really well. So I just took my club, and I threw the club head way outside my hands. I felt like I threw the shaft straight up in the air. Then I felt like I made a loop that was about 10 feet wide in the backswing and the downswing. And to my dismay, or my surprise, I mean, the ball hit right in the center of the face, flew out there with a shallow divot, and actually drew in the opposite direction to the left. And I put my hand in my face, and I go, Jesus, what is this going to look like? So I went back to the camera, and I, you know, put my eye into the viewfinder. And my golf club never left the plane going back or down. Just went right up it, right down it, no loop at all.
Whoa.
I said to myself, you've got to be kidding me. I have to feel like that just to look normal. And it was after I did that I really tried to help my students embrace this idea of not being afraid to feel extreme or radical in making the change, because I'm here with you. You know, I'm leading you through the process. You know, trust in me for just a few minutes. And with a little bit of visual feedback with the camera and also the kinesthetic feedback of actually changing the ball flight, you're going to have the confidence to feel crazy, look correct, and really take the leap that every golfer needs to take in order to really make a change. And most people on their own are never going to get to that point, and that's why they fail.
For the average recreational golfer, how long should we expect a swing change to take? I mean, say we've taken the lesson. It's like, yeah, you know what? You really have to go through some serious swing changes here. And we have a coach that we trust that we've been working with. And they're really suggesting that we make some serious changes here. And, you know, we get to play 2-3 times a month and maybe practice once or twice a month, you know, or even someone who gets a chance to go out and practice every single week, you know, which in our lives, that's a pretty difficult thing to do with all that's going on. Even as committed as we are to golf, we can't get out as often as we'd like. So if we're going to commit to a swing change, how much time should we expect to feel comfortable with that change?
The first thing that people have to realize is that everyone has their own pattern. You know, so for example, if you're somebody who slices too much, you have a slicing pattern. If you're hooking too much, you have a hooking pattern. The reason why you're hooking or slicing, it could be a hands problem, it could be an arms problem, it could be a body problem, but whatever the pattern is, the way that you create that ball flight is sort of native to you. So whatever you're doing now isn't going to change overnight. You're always going to sort of gravitate back towards the same motions that you started with. With that being said, you can change your swing within one swing with the right attitude. All right. Now, ownership of that skill level is going to take time. So you really need to have a blueprint, you know, based on patience, will, and discipline. And what I like to try and get my clients to do is, number one, you know, understand fully what's happening now and why it's happening. And then we talk about what you'd like to do instead. And then have this attitude based around patience, will, and discipline, where each time they go out, they're practicing properly, they're increasing their golf IQ, they're always slowly chipping away, leading towards this point where they're going to be able to walk out on the practice tee or the lesson tee or the first tee and be able to look at their target, swing with confidence, and not have any swing thoughts at all. If you talk to a touring professional, you know, Tiger Woods has been on record as saying, it takes me a year to make a swing change. I mean, think about how many balls he hits. And when you hear a comment like that, it can be pretty demoralizing to the average player. So, I mean, golf is a journey. And I think if you get out there and you are too concerned with, you know, when will I have this finish? You know, when will I be able to just stand up and swing? You're probably not going to follow the process and do the things necessary to really develop ownership of the skill for a long-term period. So what I try and also do is help my players understand the difference between learning and performing, which is a big thing you got to be able to do. When you go out to the practice tee, I mean, that's when you're in learning mode. And that's when you should be working on drills, changing the pace of your swing to be able to create more awareness of the motions that you're making. You might be hitting drivers 120 yards just to try and feel a difference in the left wrist at the top or an impact position at the bottom or a follow through, whatever. And these are all learning things. We're not really worried about the outcome. You're more worried about the movement and the process. When you walk from the practice to the first tee, that's when you're going to be performing. That's when you're trying to look at the target, take that aim, leave the practice tee thoughts behind. When you go to that performance mode, you really need to try and whittle your swing thoughts down to maybe one thought or one key that's going to work for you for the day. And the thing that's really important that people do is they don't get too caught up in having the perfect swing or having the swing that they're making for that particular day influence their amount of enjoyment they're having during that round. And I've had people go out, play a great round of golf, come back in for their golf lesson, see themselves on video, see their golf club across the line at the top or laid off at the top, and automatically they go, oh, you mean I was swinging like that all day? So right away, the visual aspect of their golf swing in some way diminished the amount of fun they had because they thought they were swinging the way they wanted to swing.
Oh.
And that's a big problem for golfers. And yeah. The one thing I always try and tell them is this great Jack Nicklaus quote. It's the fact that Jack Nicklaus said, I've won a lot of different tournaments with different golf swings. You know, and golf swings are like snowflakes. You will never make the same two swings in your entire lifetime. So if you can sort of connect with that ebb and flow that occurs within every golfer's swing and understand that your swing is going to be different today as it is tomorrow, as it is next week, you know, learn how to get into learning mode, learn how to shift performing mode, adopt a mantra of patience, will, and discipline, then you're going to enjoy this game and you're going to enjoy the challenge of learning how to play and be the kind of golfer that you ultimately want to be.
And I have to believe that when you meet a new client to teach, most of the time when you ask, what do you want out of this, they're going to say, I want more consistency.
Oh, sure. I mean, they want to be more consistent. And their consistency for them is based off of the fact that at some point in time, they've hit a shot that's felt perfect. It's felt like the home run. Hit the side of the face. Well,
right,
if they're not great, if I can just do that again, you know, that would be great.
Yeah, right. The guy who said, well, yeah, I've hit my 5-iron 175 yards once, so I'm going to go for it on this shot. I've done it once, so yeah, I'm going to go for it on this shot, right?
Right, right, right. And, you know, the consistency thing is, that's also sort of a loss leader as well, because, you know, when a golfer goes out, it's almost kind of like skiing. You know, I went skiing for the first time when I was in about sixth or seventh grade. You know, and I spent the whole day falling on my butt thinking that I could pull this off on my own. And I took a lesson the next day, and I was like, wow, everything that I thought was correct was actually the exact opposite. You know, you're on these skis, and you're pointed down this really steep hill, and you're afraid of going too fast. So what do? Well, you try and lean back. You try and protect losing control. Well, the more you lean back, the more out of control you become. So actually, to be able to ski effectively down a really steep slope, you kind of have to go for it. You got to point your weight down the mountain. You got to be aggressive with your turns. The exact opposite of what you would think. So, same thing with golf. You know, every golfer has two problems that they're facing every time they walk up to a golf shot. Number one, I got to get the ball up in the air. Number two, I like to hit the golf ball in a straight line. Well, the thing is, they say, well, you know what? If I want to hit it straight, maybe I should swing straight. Well, the thing is, if you swing straight, you're going to hit a big slice. Straight swings hit curve shots. Curve swings hit straight shots. Secondly, I want the ball up in the air. Well, maybe I should get underneath it like a shovel. Well, the thing is, everyone knows that, at least they should know, that if you're going to try and compress your golf ball, you want to be able to strike a little bit into the ground with a slightly descending blow. So right away, a golfer goes out and he says, you know what, I'm going to try this on my own. And they make a swing, they make a swing, they make a swing, and by happenstance, they're able to actually connect with the ball, get it up in the air, using ideas that are entirely contrary to the design of the sport. And instead of going in to get a golf lesson to get a proper blueprint, they go, you know what, I can do this. I know how it feels. Now I just need to be more consistent. And that starts off the process, which is a lifetime of disappointment in shooting 90s, 100s, and beyond.
So is working with your certified PGA instructor the only way to do this?
Well, it's not the only way to do it. You know, but you've got to have a certain amount of golf IQ involved so that you understand the conditions under which the game is played. So, for example, everyone's probably played croquet at least once in their lifetime. You know, no one goes out for croquet lessons, you know, because that would be ridiculous. But the thing is, a croquet stick is built a certain way, right? It's built to stand straight up and down. So everyone from a 5-year-old to an 80-year-old grabs a croquet stick, goes out in the backyard, they straddle the target line, and then they move the croquet stick back and through on a straight line. It's obvious to use it that way because that's how it's built. Well, the thing is now you go out and you buy these ping golf clubs. And you got this guy, Carsten Solheim, you know, who spent his whole life in probably about $100 million building this equipment. And this equipment is built to lean to the inside of the target line. And it's also built with a little bit of forward lean towards the target. And everyone that grabs this golf club picks it up and goes, hey, I know how to use this. And they take it and they swing it up and down in a straight line. You know, that just seems ridiculous to me. It's built on a lean. Why don't we use it on a lean? And that's the big problem with golf, is that people don't take any time to consider how to use the club based on its basic design. So I think people rush to judgment. They assume they know what needs to be done. They say, hey, hit it straight, swing straight, get it up in the air, get underneath it. And that's the difference between accomplished players and non-accomplished players.
You have a lot of video on the web in your teachings. How's that worked for you, and what is it? What kind of videos do you tend to focus on that you produce?
You know, these videos, they started about 2 years ago. I put them on YouTube. They're, you know, 1.5 to 3 minute clips that I would do in between my lessons. I would just post them out there. And, you know, the videos I put out, you know, most of them aren't really geared towards any one specific problem. I've sort of been gravitating more in that direction just because I have so many of them now. I've got about 70 of them on there that are entirely free. But my goal with golfers is to help them understand how the game is supposed to be played so that when they go out there and they start taking their grip and making swings, they start to make better decisions on what they want to feel and what their goals are. And the big thing that I've gotten in terms of response from my videos from people all over the world is that the way that I describe things and explain things makes sense. You know, I connect with these videos in a way that I haven't connected with other videos before. So, you know, my message to golfers is to, you know, be able to understand the conditions of the game a little bit better. Try and play as many shots as possible with the same basic thoughts in mind, and you're going to go out there and you're going to have a lot more fun. And, you know, when you see the look on someone's face or you read an email where someone finally gets it, you know, that's an exciting thing because people are passionate about their golf games. I mean, they listen to your podcast, they read books, they buy DVDs, and they go out each day and they have a certain level of enthusiasm where they want to play better golf. They want to be out there with their friends and their family. And then all of a sudden they don't play so well, and that enthusiasm is knocked down for another week. You know, but they keep on getting up and going for it. And when people see my information and they respond back, hey, I finally got it. What you said made sense. And now I went out there and I wasn't disappointed. I wasn't let down by my enthusiasm. You know, that's a great gift for an instructor to have. So, you know, they're out there, about 70 videos on YouTube. They're entirely free. You can get to them through my website, jeffrittergolf.com. And I love putting them out there. I love connecting with people all over the world. And it's been an amazing thing through social media that we didn't have just a few years ago.
Right. And if you're in YouTube, you would just type in Jeff Ritter Golf or Jeff Ritter?
You can type in Jeff Ritter Golf. If you type in J Ritter 5, that's what the channel's known as. But if you're at jeffrittergolf.com, you can find it. But there's actually a Jeff Ritter Golf channel where all the videos are hosted on that same channel. It's branded with my Academy logo. It has my contact information. People can actually hit a link, and they can actually come to my website and purchase an online golf lesson. So if they like what I have to say, you can send me a video right to my studio, and I'll be able to analyze that. In fact, after our interview today, I got a couple of swings I have to look at. There's a kid in Finland who's been sending his swing for about 6 months, and every time I get his videos, it's nice because the snow gets a little bit lower. He started off with about 3 feet of snow in the background, and this one right here, his ski cap's off and looks like it's pretty green. But things like that that, you know, are so exciting to the game, and it really is inspiring as a coach to see where this whole coaching thing's going to go in the future. Just great things like being able to do these podcasts, these radio shows, which you think about 10 years ago, it just really wasn't possible. But now every day, people have so much access to so much great information, and it's exciting to be able to connect with people all over the world. You know, normally when you run a business, you know, unless you're Microsoft or General Motors, you think that, you know what, I'm going to try and do some good work here locally, and hopefully I'll meet a nice girl and raise a family, and this is what it's going to be. But with the internet and where it's going, I mean, you can connect with people from every corner of the world, and they come out to see you, and they create opportunities for you to see them, and it's really a global experience. And I'm excited to be part of it.
Yeah, it's incredible because having a radio background, you know, you were hoping to, you know, have a regional following of some sort, or just be able to connect with people on a regional basis. But having the opportunity to speak with like-minded people with the same interests, and they're all over the world and just want to share this information, makes it so much more fun. I just love doing this.
And one of the things I was thinking about the other day, which is kind of perfect for this topic, is the fact that, you know, you have this world, you watch the news at night, and, I mean, there's a lot of different opinions on what needs to be done globally with pretty much anything you want to talk about. And then you have politics, and, you know, the news in general can be a very depressing thing to watch. And you think about the difference in governments from the U.S. to China to the Czech Republic or whatever you're talking about. And, you know, golf gives us this great commonality, you know, that's truly global. And it doesn't really matter, you know, who you are, where you're from, what language you speak, what religious background you have. There's people all over the world that are waiting, dying to get off work early so they can go play nine holes. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter where you're from or who you are. When you miss a putt that lips out for your best score ever, we all have the same reaction to it. And I think that's an exciting thing. It just shows you how much golf can really connect us and create a sense of oneness. And I think it gives us hope. You know what I mean? It's a good thing.
I'm gonna dispute you on that one. I've seen people throw clubs, and I've seen people laugh. You know, I mean, I tend to laugh when I miss those things, and I don't throw things, you know, but, you know, it's not always the same reaction.
Well, we all want it to go in. We all,
okay.
We all in that moment are you know, experiencing our true essence, and all the other things that separate us fall to the wayside, and we share this commonality in trying to put this little ball into this hole and seeing how well we can do it and seeing how we react to it and connecting it to who we are, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I guess it's everybody's reaction would be, ah. It's what follows the ah, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's either aha or ah, yeah, right.
Yeah. You know?
You also, we had talked about, I don't know if you can talk about it here, but you're developing an iPhone app?
I am.
Oh, can we talk about that for a moment? Because there's a lot of folks with iPhones.
Yeah, I'd love to. Well, it's Jeff Ritter Golf iPhone app. It's really born from the success that I had off of these YouTube videos. And we shot over 60 videos in high definition, all mic'd up just like you're watching it on TV. And it's going to be out probably conservatively, I'll say say mid-July. So we're in the editing process right now. We've got a couple of great sponsors behind it, which I can't speak of just yet because the ink isn't quite dry in some of these contracts. But it's going to be one of these things where you're going to be able to use your handheld device, and you're going to be able to get high-quality videos. They're all going to be in that 1 to 2.5, 3-minute range tops. So it's going to be something that you can enjoy my coaching out there on the lesson tee, in the airport, and wherever heck, wherever else you want to watch it. And I think it's going to be a good thing. So we're going to do version one. It'll evolve into other versions. But the great thing about this app that people should know about, it's a free app to download.
Oh, that's nice.
So it's going to be 10 free videos to see. They're going to be sort of covering everything from swing plane to fixing the hook, fixing the slice, chipping, pitching, putting sand. And then after that, if you like what you see and you want to delve a little bit deeper into it, they're just going to be within-app purchasing. So,
yeah. Talking about the practice tee, the lesson tee, and the warm-up tee, those three different places, I mean, should you be practicing before your round, or is that a completely different thing?
Well, I mean, I think the practice tee, or the learning tee, as you might want to call it, is all about, where you're making a change. So that's sort of when people come to see me, we're talking about making changes. We're stepping back. We're seeing where we are now versus where we're going. If it's the warm-up tee, then you're just trying to warm up before your day's round. And that should all be about, number one, getting loose. Number two, connecting with and understanding what your ball flight's going to be for that particular day. And then committing to that ball flight throughout your round. So what most people
not
do,
correcting it. Not making changes throughout the round until you get the ball flight that you're used to, huh? You just accept what you have that day and then work with that?
That's the best thing to do.
Wow,
that's kind of where
that's great.
That's where that Jack Nicklaus quote comes in handy. I've won a lot of tournaments with different swings. And the thing is that when you are trying to make a change, you're in learning mode, right? When you go to the course, you're supposed to be in performance mode, which is, taking in your surroundings, the lie, the wind, how the flag is positioned, hazards. You're supposed to be looking at the target and, like Harvey Penning says, taking dead aim. Well, the thing is, if you're halfway learning and halfway performing, you're probably going to do a lousy job of both. And the best way for you to perform and shoot your lowest score is to accept the ball flight you have for the day, let your aiming revolve around that ball flight, and do your best to connect with the target and get the golf ball in the hole. That's how you can still play good golf and win championships when you don't have your best stuff. And most people don't do that. Most people are halfway learning, halfway performing, and as a result, they really don't get what they want.
So interesting, because people are always trying to tweak their swing throughout a round. It's like they'll make comments on the first tee, their first tee shot, and they go, "Oh no, not today," and then just try to tweak for the next 4 hours.
Exactly, and that's not today. I mean, 4 hours is it's a long time.
Hours. Let's say the next 90 shots.
Yeah,
right?
There's a lot of golf to be played, and there's a lot of opportunities to be had, and every golfer is going to have strengths and every golfer is going to have weaknesses, but most people don't connect very well with what it means to play the game. And we said this in our last interview, golf isn't about who hits the best, it's about who misses it the least. I think golf is exciting from a competition standpoint because some people, they hit that first shot and they go, "Oh, not today," and other people hit that shot and they shift their mentality entirely to a different mode, which is the gutted out competitors, grinders mode. And it's exciting to be able to see how well I can play when I don't have my best stuff. And I've played in junior golf growing up with some kids that have the ugliest swings you've ever seen. Big divots, big peeling golf ball left to right, kind of like a Bruce Litsky. And they didn't know what their swing looked like. They didn't care. All they wanted to do was was hit it and find it and hit it and find it and find a way to jam the ball in the hole. And they loved playing the game. And then you would have these other kids that were so technically immersed in being perfect and looking good. And every time the ball goes sideways, you know, they slam their club into the back of their golf bag. And it's really an interesting opportunity for people to really take stock and look at themselves and ask themselves, you know, why am I here? Why am I here today? What is my goal today? And am I responding in a manner that's going to help me get what I want? And for most people, the answer is no.
This is a huge piece of advice from you. I'm really kind of taken aback because, you know, so often it's a round of golf that, like, oh, I'm feeling frustrated today. It's not happening. But the idea of how am I going to succeed with this, you know, with this swing today, as opposed
right.
to just being frustrated and throwing off your clubs, going, oh, I don't have what I want to have, but accepting
exactly.
with golf what it really is.
Well, I mean, your day doesn't determine your attitude. Your attitude determines your day.
Ooh.
And imagine if you would.
That's good.
Imagine if you woke up in the morning, and you drive to work, and you've got a list of things to do. You got clients to meet, and the first phone call you make, the vendor on the other end of the line says, you know, I'm sorry, we're not going to go with you as we originally planned. We decided to go with somebody else. You know, what are you going to do? Throw your hands up and go, oh no, not today. Today isn't my day. Well, heck, you got, you know, 7 more hours of work. I mean, if you already start off feeling like a victim, feeling the defeatist mentality, I guarantee you the rest of the day is not going to go very well either. And that's why golf is this great metaphor for life, because it gives you the opportunity to have a plan, to try your best, and see how well you deal with not getting what you want. And the people that are able to handle themselves well on the golf course, I guarantee you they handle themselves pretty well in other areas of life as well. And I actually had a student one day, a woman came out. She was probably, you know, in her, you know, late 30s, early 40s. I think she was married once, and she was sort of out on the prowl looking for her next man. And she said, you know, I always have my first dates on a golf course. This is what I've learned. I said, first dates on a golf course. She said, you know what? In 9 holes, watching a man hit a golf ball and see how he responds, I can tell whether it's worth not pursuing any further.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah. And she's absolutely right. And it's, I can imagine so many guys that she's gone on a date with, like, you want to play golf for the first date?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh, I'm in heaven already. They better be on their best behavior.
Exactly, and it's one of these things where, you know, if you can't have fun playing a game, you know, if you can't respond favorably to not getting what you want when you're just out there with the hot sun on your neck and a nice cool breeze and, you know, a cocktail in your hand, then how in the world are you going to respond to not getting what you want in your relationships when things really get bad? You know, so I think that's why golf is good. You know, people can really see some things that they can improve on and just in how they respond to hitting a little ball around a big green arena for a couple hours.
I talk a lot on this show with fitness experts and focus on fitness and flexibility in golf. And I know that that's an important element of your teaching as well.
It is, absolutely. And, you know, I've always been interested in fitness and strength. And, you know, the younger you are, it's all about, you know, looking good, you know, in your bathing suit and having muscles and all that stuff. But, you know, a couple of years ago, as I was, you know, putting together some of the material for my little book, I came across this book called the Tao Te Ching. And the Tao Te Ching is this 5,000-year-old ancient text on the art of living. And it started to make this connection between the birth-death continuum of living things. And it basically said that in birth, you know, we are soft and supple, and in death, we are hard and brittle. And it says those who practice flexibility in body and mind will always be disciples of life, whereas those who are inflexible in body and mind are instead disciples of death. And it really hit me really hard, and that's the first time I understood why doing something like yoga was so important, not only to maybe getting longer backswing, but also, you know, having happiness throughout your entire life. And the thing is, if you look at any retirement home, there's a lot of people that are shuffling around that can barely move. They're rigid in body. If you look at people that are unhappy with their lives, usually they are rigid in mind. They're not very flexible. They can't roll with the punches and see things from a variety of perspectives. So when you're doing something like yoga from a fitness perspective, number one, it forces you to be in the present, so your mind becomes a little bit lighter for the day. And secondly, obviously practices advanced levels of physical flexibility, which are important to your ability to enjoy your life as long as you possibly can. So I really believe in a lot of things from a strength perspective, but the last couple of years I really started to understand this whole yoga thing. It makes a lot of sense, and I think a lot of golfers are going to start going that route in the future as well.
Oh, yeah. I've been a big fan of little Catherine Roberts, Yoga for Golfers.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Yeah, she is. And Ann Grassel, our resident TPI certified instructor. I think what the whole thing that TPI is doing, Titleist Performance Institute, I think really, I think they have the right idea. I think they're doing a great job.
Well, they've got great stuff. I've been to a couple of their seminars. I'm actually fairly tied in with Athletes Performance, CorePerformance.com. They deal with a lot of pro athletes, a lot of first-round NFL draft picks, and people like Mia Hamm and Brett Favre and Nomar Garciaparra. But they were actually located within walking distance of my lesson tape for about the last 8 years. They just moved up more north here in the Scottsdale area. But I learned a lot from a guy named Mark Verstegen, just in terms of what it means to train for sport versus train for looks. And you know, a lot of people that are out there, they think that just like with golf, they think they can do it on their own, or they think that, you know, going to the gym, if I just do a couple sets of bench press and maybe run on the treadmill for a half an hour, that's going to get me, you know, the results I'm looking for. And it's just it's a much, much deeper topic than that. So you're right. You know, things like CorePerformance.com, there's a lot of free advice. The Titleist Performance Institute, I know, at least I believe in the past, that site was entirely free. And I think people just need to, before they go out and start doing something, you know, they either, number one, need to have a consultation with a professional, or then they really need to sit down and say, what do I want? What do I believe in? Tap into some of these great free resources and be able to evaluate where they are now. And when it comes down to training for golf, you know, you got to be able to be flexible in your hips, your back, your shoulders. And there's a lot of different of these screening exercises that you can actually put yourself through for free on these types of sites. And maybe for the average golfer, really start to get a handle early on of some of the things they need to do to improve in those areas.
One of the things that I just want to, if we can do this briefly, because I haven't talked about it in a while, but you and I covered it offline, was nutrition on the golf course. You know, I'm on this whole nutrition battle right now as it is. And you know, this whole notion of grabbing a sandwich or a hot dog or a burger or turkey or tuna, whatever it is at the turn, I've never had a lot of luck with that. I've always noticed that when I do eat at the turn, I just lose it for two or three holes. And I got into this grazing mentality on the golf course of just like a bag of nuts just to last me through an entire round. A 3-ounce bag of nuts. Just every couple of shots, just take one or two nuts and keep drinking water. And since I've done that, the wheels don't fall off. You know, everyone talks about, the wheels have fallen off the wagon here. And they start getting tired and making excuses about, it's the 15th hole. I always start losing the 15th, 16th hole. But there should be ways to beat that. And I think that that's a nutrition thing. Do you have thoughts on that?
I do. I'm not a nutritionist. This advice here, these comments are based on just people that I've worked with.
That's okay. I don't give golf instruction.
Yeah. Well, there's a great nutritionist. Her name's Kate Monroe. She's got a website, katemonroe.com. She's done a lot of work with, Golf Digest magazine. She's the nutrition editor for Golf Punk magazine in the UK. And the thing is that a lot of with the nutrition, it's such a difficult thing because every time you go on to like MSN.com, every day there's a new nutrition tip, eat more carbs, eat less carbs, try these acai berries. I mean, it's all entertainment. You know, unless you see something in its totality, it's really difficult to say, what should I do differently and get an idea of what my overall health should look like. But there's been a lot of research done, and the basic thing that she's gotten across to me is the fact that You know, it's not really the fats that are an issue in our diets. It's the sugars. It's the excess carbohydrates. And any time, for example, a golfer bases their energy off of sugar intake, such as things like bananas and yogurt, they're going to set themselves up for a pretty big crash. And if you can eat more fats, actually eat more proteins as your source of energy, then you're going to actually have more sustainable energy throughout your entire round. And a lot of times when people look at their breakfast, they say, you know what, what's a healthy breakfast? Well, you know, I'm going to have a muffin, I'm going to have a banana, and I'm going to have a yogurt, and I'm going to have an orange juice. Well, that all sounds pretty healthy because that's the kind of stuff we've been told to eat. But if you look at the sugar content in just those items, I mean, you might be ingesting about 100 grams of sugar before you even start your day. And that sugar is going to set you up for a big crash. If you look at, you know, body composition, I believe that, you know, your bloodstream is only supposed to have about 4 grams of sugar in it at any given time, just the way that humans are designed. And already in breakfast, you just ate your so-called healthy breakfast, and you shoved 100 grams of sugar in there. So I think when people eat breakfast that way, or throughout the round they're using sugar for energy, that sugar sets them up for a crash, and they lose focus, they get irritable, they don't make their best swing. So just from my perspective, I try and eat more protein. I'm not worried about fats in my diet. I try and keep my sugar to a minimum.
And do you eat on the golf course at all?
You know, I can eat something at the turn. I think the nuts that you talked about are great. I mean, nuts are supposed to be, I think it's walnuts, are supposed to be like great brain fruit, great for concentration. Things like that are good. But definitely I'm not making choices that are sugar-based. And I think that's the big tip that people can take away.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeff.
You're welcome.
This has been just thoroughly entertaining and informative. I appreciate it, and I wish you all the luck in the world. Jeff at jeffrittergolf.com and his YouTube channels, jritter5, among others. Let me ask again. When you talked about your nutritionist friend there, is it Caitlin Rowe or Kate Monroe?
Kate Monroe. It's actually Kate with a C, Monroe, M-U-N-R-O-E. She's a fantastic. She probably has the best website I've seen on the internet. It's so informative. It's one of those great sites that is just full of great free advice and resources on everything you can possibly think of. It's so fantastic. And if you're interested in your health, I mean, I would definitely take the time to look her up because she's definitely got some good advice to give out there.
It's Kate, C-A-T-E, Monroe, M-U-N-R-O-E.
Yep, katemonroe.com.
Okay, very good. All right, Jeff, thanks for talking to us. Best of luck to you, and hopefully we'll talk to you again in the future.
All right, Fred, thanks for having me.
I really encourage you to check out Jeff's book, Your Kid Ate a Divot, 18 Life Lessons from the Links, available in our Golfer's Mart at golfsmarter.com, his website. Check that out, jeffrittergolf.com, and, of course, his YouTube channel, which he has a number of some really good instructional videos. Also, he's coming out with an iPhone app, so keep your eyes open for that if you are an owner of an iPhone. Nothing on Android yet. We close with another reason why you love or hate golf. It's brought to you by the new book of golf poems by John Ducker called The Kiss That Caused My Slice. So poetic. This book is a great Father's Day present and is also available in our book section at the Golfer's Mart at golfsmarter.com. So many of the entries that I've received from you talk about, there's some redundancies here, but that's why we love golf. You talk about the being outdoors. Of course, you talk about your regular friendships, then the friendships that you've created. And of course, you talk about the 19th hole. But I'd like to thank Mike North of Dublin, California, for his reason why golf is so important to him. For his submission, Mike is going to receive a signed copy of the book, The Kiss That Caused My Slice. And here's what Mike says. Because I had badly formed feet as a child, it was a sport I could play and have an even playing field with any athlete at school. I beat almost everyone because golf is about heart, not feet. If you've not done so already, please participate in our conversations on our Facebook group at facebook.com and encourage your friends to join the conversation as well. You can now also find Golf Smarter on Twitter, too. If you have any questions, comments, or reasons why you love or hate golf, click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.